Welcome to Everything Rodeo, where we separate champions from the rest of the crowd.
We'll take you down the trail of someone's life, a long haul tour rodeo, and our everyday adventures.
So brace yourself,
because it's fixing to be a wild ride.
We're your hosts,
Nace Renfrey
and Cody Stanley.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Everything Rodeo Podcast, episode number 27.
Right here at the R.A. Brown Ranch, we got with us Tucker Brown.
That's the best introduction I've ever had.
Welcome to the show, Tucker.
Well, we don't do anything second class around here. It's all first.
I believe that.
100%. Even our introductions.
Yes.
Well, if it goes any better than that, then it's going to be great.
It's going to be a great thing. Dude, speaking of great, it was your great, 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 great grandpa. That's four greats.
That's four greats.
Six generations away that started the R.A. Brown Ranch back in 1885.
That's it, 1895.
1895.
Probably ranching in 85 too, but our first record says 1895. Is in Calvert, Texas, and it was selling cattle to Cuba.
Cuba.
Wow. It was our first invoice, and I mean, we're assuming we were in it before.
Had to have been in it for a little while to have the cattle to sell.
Right, right. But since that's kind of our first marker that we found, that's what we go by.
That was in a different spot of the state, part of the state. So how long have you been right here in Throckmorton?
It was in a different part of the state in Calvert, which is down near College Station, a little southeast of here. And it would have been my great, great, great grandfather that went to the Fort Worth Stockyards and started one of the first ever commission companies selling cattle. And with the money he made there, he bought the ranch in Throckmorton in 1903, right in there. And brought the first Hereford cattle to Throckmorton, and been here ever since.
Ever since.
That's crazy.
He stayed in Fort Worth, but sent his son.
Yeah, to come run the ranch.
Yeah.
How many acres did he buy at first?
Oh, I don't know that much. That's a good question. I know a lady that'll know it. My grandmother, Miss Peggy Brown, sweetheart.
We'll just have her on the show. Just get out of here.
Oh, that would make my day. I would love that.
Back in the day, not too curious about acreage, but how much acreage are y'all operating today?
The R.A. Brown Ranch, my granddad was the one who really made it take off, and he was working on about 77,000 plus acres with some lease places too. And Rob really worked hard and put this thing. Rob and Peggy being the really sharp person beside him, working with him, and really made it what it is today. And since in 2013, there was a generation transfer from my granddad to my dad and his three siblings. And we each work our own, I guess you could say, quarter of the ranch. And that was I wasn't a part of it, but that was our family's way of keeping the ranch in the family and the family in the ranch. That was our goal. And each family member kind of wanted to go a different direction. And so instead of either staying stagnant or fighting over what we were going to do, the best way that they thought to do it would be, I don't like to use the word split, but was to divide the ranch and run our own. And we all still work together. That's the best part.
Right.
Because it breaks my heart when I do see a ranch that splits and the family splits too.
Yeah.
Because that's...
You see that pretty often.
More and more.
It's still all the R.A. Brown Ranch. You just have different divisions pretty much now.
Yeah. It is. And some have renamed... have renamed under their name, the McCartney Ranch, the Bella Ranch, my dad's two sisters, but they are still running R.A. Brown Ranch cattle, and even sell some bulls in our sale as a cooperator, and so we work a lot together.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Tucker and I met through a mutual friend. Tucker walked right up to me and he said, hey, I don't know anyone around here, so I'm Tucker Brown. I said, hey, I'm Nace Renfrey. Nice to meet you. And then I think that we had, you were like, oh, you have a podcast. And I was like, I'm pretty sure Cody's been talking to you through TikTok and stuff. So so tell us a little bit about how social media has influenced the ranch and how it's really kind of played a big part in your role here at the ranch as well.
Yeah, probably started with my mom. She is a very talented photographer and does a lot of that. She probably started whenever I was in high school just to get some pictures of sporting events and stuff. And then she just really took off with it and really talented at Western photography. And then my cousin also started doing it, Emily McCartney Photography, Roadrunner Gallery. And, man, she does some cool stuff, goes all over and does brandings. And she's so talented. So watching those two, I kind of developed my own eye for what angles I could see them shoot and stuff. And but my mom had done it, and we love advertising. Like, we really find a lot of value in advertisement. Mm-hmm. We like to say that if you're not advertising, it's like winking at a girl in the dark. Like, nobody knows what's going on but you, buddy. And so we've always kind of been progressive, and we found that way to be a valuable way to get our cattle, our brand, our mission in front of other cattlemen's eyes. And I kind of took it to the next level of the way it's changed in the past 10 years and following the trends. And I guess during COVID, I kind of started. I'd been doing media for a while, whether it was sports broadcasting or making some videos for the ranch. And then, man, when TikTok came around, I don't know, it kind of changed the way video development went. And I really like video. And so just kind of started there during COVID when I was stuck here on the ranch and not going to conventions or seeing people and needed a good laugh. And, man, people kind of like it.
Yeah, your TikTok dances are incredible. So
all of my dances.
No, I just think it's interesting just the way the world's evolved, you know. Like, back in the day, who'd ever thought that there would even be media tied to a ranch or photography or any kind of collaboration between different companies at a ranch, let alone just, you know, not a small ranch or a larger ranch. But one thing, you know, a couple weeks ago, you were talking about the mesquite trees. So a couple episodes ago, we had the opportunity to meet at a ranch very similar, been in the family for a long time, and just the challenges that came with ranching. So the other day on social media, I seen you talked about the mesquite trees and how much water and stuff that those intake and draws a lot of the water that you could be using elsewhere on the ranch. Would you say that your ranch faces a lot of challenges similar to that? I know out there, especially with just the influence of the government and wildfires and all sorts of stuff like that, have you had anything like that impact this ranch?
Yeah, the mesquite tree is, for North Texas, just kind of the thorn in the side that we're continually fighting. And, you know, with Arizona, I'm sure that every drop counts. Whenever I think of Arizona, I hadn't been there, but I feel like every drop you get counts. And it's not as much that way here. We get about 25 inches a year, but, you know, it's been pretty droughty from 2011 to now. And to prepare for that, kind of one of our deals has been to fight that mesquite tree, and they take over 20 gallons a day per tree, and there's a lot of trees out there.
Yeah.
And when you start adding up all of those gallons that you could be putting into the grass, that excites me, because I know that that our ranch can take more cattle and still be sustainable, like not overgrazing it. We can increase the efficiency of our ranch and putting more pounds of beef per acre. And so that, you know, the future's bright.
Really, if you crunch numbers, like, you know, you probably eliminate 10 to 12 mesquite trees, and you could probably put another cow on that place.
Yeah, I think it would take it a while to recover. You know, probably 10 years.
Yeah.
It just takes a while out here, and, you know, the more west you go, the longer it takes to recover. But
yes, sir.
Not always, but in general. Mm-hmm. So, but for us, it takes about 10 years. If something is grazed off to this table, it takes it 10 years to come back and be, you know, not
fertile ground.
Yeah, be good ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think another thing, too, they talked about was just developers even coming in saying, you know, we'll give you this, we'll write you a check right now for this amount of money. I don't know if there's ever been anything like that, but, you know, they, within that ranch, it, obviously their family wasn't figuring how to split the ranch up if the sister wanted out or anything like that. But the influence of money and stuff like that. You know, I'm sure there's so many different things that go into that. And I know that you probably don't deal with a lot of that kind of stuff, but I'm just thinking in general. I mean, it's really cool to, at least in the past year, to be able to see now you guys have interns and you have a lot of more opportunity here on the ranch for people to learn and grow. I mean, for me today, like when we first got here, I got to see them, you know, run bulls through there and check and see if, you know, everything's good. So it's pretty cool to like watch some guys be able to come out and do it. And then they're also getting a learning experience. At the same time, it takes some of those priorities off of you so that you can focus on the media side of the ranching and all sorts of stuff. So
yeah, we've had our internship deal for this is our 23rd year that we've had an intern in a row.
That's awesome.
And
you guys partner with like a college around here or something, or is
not necessarily? I mean, we do like to work with some. We love working with University of Florida, Texas Tech, Texas A&M, Tarleton, WT, West Texas A&M. Like they're a lot of local ones, and we do quite a bit of business in Florida. So University of Florida has been sent us some great options. But now with social media and being able to have a platform to share that, I mean, our applicants have really grown.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, we have some value to add to the intern of being able to see what it takes to put on a sale, to develop, you know, 800 bulls a year and to breed them and to set up the cows. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of allows me to be able to get home and see my wife, and it allows, whether instead of me pushing bulls up the chute, I can run the feed truck like I did today,
right,
or you know, help our mechanic out, or I can go shoot a video that we're needing to put up for the sale coming up. Mm-hmm. And so it really helps us both ways. And we've had years where it's only helped us and it ended bad. Mm-hmm. Or it only helped them and it ended bad. So we've really worked lately to make it work both ways.
Yes, sir. How's that process work for the applicants to apply and come work for the RA Brown?
We have an application online, rabrownranch.com, and it's kind of hard to find. And we want it that way because we want to know that those who apply to have looked at the website and searched and looked for it and wanted it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a thing we've done, and we really like that. And so go there, apply. Our internships run from January to June and then June to December, which makes it kind of tough for those in school. Mm-hmm. But that's when we have the most to offer because the summer internships are great, and I understand that because I did them when I was in college. Mm-hmm. But in the summer, we don't have sales. We're not breeding cows. We're not calving. Like, that's not when we need the most help and when we can offer the most learning experiences.
Yes, sir.
So that's why we've changed it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What was it like growing up here at the R.A. Brown?
Man, I loved it. The opportunities that I had growing up, whether it was showing heifers or whether it was helping the crew out here at the ranch or whether it was just being able to go to school and play football, mm-hmm. you know, I love being able to call this home, and I didn't necessarily recognize that until I left, until I graduated high school and left. And when I did leave, I was like, "Yeah, I'll be back for Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas." And I went to Lubbock Christian University, and I love that place, but it is not a place of agriculture, I would say. And so I was surrounded by people that were more separated from ag than I'd ever been around.
Yes, sir.
And that's when I was like, that's what I learned. Mm-hmm. I was like, why do they think that way? Oh, because I showed that heifer and mm-hmm. I fed that thing, and it was only me that was going to feed it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some importance to that. And I was like, if I want my kids to have that, and I have this opportunity at home, and I have family that have worked for five generations before me, and that's when I was just really driven and passionate about coming back home and being a part of something special.
Yes, sir. You talked about showing. You guys still have a show division in the ranch, or is it just something that kind of died off with you and your brother?
Yeah, most of the showing opportunity, I think, is more for us was more about learning to take care of an animal and mm-hmm. call it our own and being able to train it and just being able to learn to do that. It seems like the production, cattle production and cattle showing have separated more and more as time has gone on.
Yeah.
And for a company that is, you know, for a business that's in the production side, it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
And it can be. We have quit showing since we graduated and really hadn't looked back.
Yes,
but I do hope that my two girls get to show, because that's just a great learning opportunity and good memories.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so there's a sign back behind us with your beautiful face on it for Beef Advocate of the Year. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that I went to NCBA convention, National Beef Cattlemen's Association. It's that's kind of the political voice for our nation's beef industry.
Yes, sir.
We like to have a booth at there for our ranch. Just, you know, like I said, we love advertising. Mm-hmm. And so we had a booth there, and I saw that they had this Advocate of the Year, and I was like, what is that? So I went and listened to this gal talk about she had won it, and she did a panel and was talking, and she was a first-generation rancher from California. Very well spoken. I mean, just, you know, top notch. Mm-hmm. And then I got, you know, I was got to thinking, I was like, if the best beef advocate in the nation is a first generation rancher, then we're in trouble. Like, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
Like, I have this story to tell. Mm-hmm. And a lot of others.
Yeah.
And we're not telling it. I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of when I started taking social media probably seriously. That was 2021, mm-hmm. and started studying about those angles and lighting and what that is, and, you know, really started to study what the consumer thinks about the beef industry, mm-hmm. and what they needed to know. And the word educate really burns me a little bit, because nobody, if I said, hey, Nace, let me educate you, right, you're like, what do you mean? You think I know less?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I try to find other words. Like, I'm just really sharing the truth of the beef industry is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And getting away from the things that people may not know. Like, that's the great thing about it, is that what I do is the truth, and I don't have to remember a lie.
Yeah.
There's no smoke and mirrors. It's just like, hey, this is it. And thankfully, Yellowstone kind of made being a cowboy cool again.
That's right.
So we kind of riding on the coattail of that, and really started being successful, getting some views and people really liking it. And that's where it started, was that NCBA Beef Advocate of the Year. And it really was an honor to get that. I mean, it's not like there's a ton of people going for that, but it just gave me a goal to shoot for.
Right.
And to be recognized for, I mean, y'all know the work that goes into making the video or what you're going to post next and being consistent. So.
Yeah. And with that, you've been able to travel a little bit to different colleges and speak and share your knowledge too. So that's been pretty cool to see you traveling and being able to do that too.
I really like that. I mean, I'm a social butterfly, and as much as I love the ranch, like, my favorite part is getting to go be around people in ag or to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a place where I can talk about sports ag and be with my friends, like, wherever that is, whether it's on the ranch or in a big city, like, if I'm around those people, man, I'm having a good time.
That's awesome.
So, I've got some chances to go to Colorado, to go to College Station, to go to the Texas Panhandle. I spoke in Florida at the Florida Cattlemen's Association meeting, and more opportunities are coming up all the time with I think agriculture wanting to connect with its consumer,
its
customer, you know. And I like that. I practice it, and I feel like I'm getting better at it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you talked about playing football. Did you play here in Throckmorton?
I did, yeah. So
is it six-man?
We play six-man.
Oh, heck yeah.
I really like six man. I mean, I'm built for it.
Yeah, six man is probably like the funnest football to watch.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. The, you know, basketball with pads on, and I know there's a. I mean, I love 11 man football too. I love all football, and I know there's a lot of like hate. And I'm just like, it's not real football. It's too easy. And I'm like, man, try being on defense.
that
is tough. But my brother and I both played and got some good success, and my brother has two state rings and I got one, and just being able to be successful in Texas football, like, that's a high school kid's dream.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But it was super cool too, because my coaches are some of my best friends, and to be driven by that, and I really learned from them too on how to drive people. I was so infatuated with the way that they were able to make us want to run. If you can make people want to do something they don't want to do, I was like, wow, that is so cool. So they're still some of my best friends today.
Yeah.
And just learning their knowledge and how to communicate with people and drive people is super interesting.
Right.
How many kids was in your class?
I had 18. It was a larger class. Probably at the time, 15 was the average.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about school, what was probably like one of the most influential classes that you had or something that one of the teachers told you that was like stuck with you through the years?
High school or college?
Either one.
Either one. One of my favorite classes I took in college was a jogging class.
Jogging?
Like legit, like
you heard jogging. Me. Jogging.
Okay.
We would jog we would jog 2 days a week. But my favorite part of it is I would jog with my professor. And dude, he is one of the best people I know. Just God-fearing, hard-praying man. And we talked about baptism. We talked about prayer life. We talked about, you know, how to lead people to the Lord. And I never thought I would love a jogging class.
Yeah.
But that was so cool. And I learned a lot about my health, and I'd never really taken that seriously. And learned about my health and learned about my, you know, my spiritual health. And that was just one of my funnest classes I've ever. I don't know if, you know, something, I'm trying to think of I don't know if there's a line that just stuck with me, but
yeah.
I always looked forward to jogging, and I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah.
So we got in front of us, got your catalog for the sale coming up. When's the sale?
Sale is in 13 days.
Wow.
We are at the time.
This is the 49th annual.
49.
One more year and it'll be 50.
I know, and it's so, I want to look forward to 50.
Yeah.
It's like already looking for the Super Bowl, but we got 17 games to get there. Yeah, like yeah. That one's 49th is just 14 days away, October 10th and 11th. And, you know, that's, as a rancher, you have one or two paydays a year. And when you say it like that to anybody outside the industry, they go, "How? What? Mm-hmm. How many?" And when you say it out loud, even to yourself, you're like, one a year.
Yeah.
And so it's a big day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to sell 580 bulls, sell over 100 registered females and 480 commercial females. It'll be a big day. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for it because the market's good. We have high hopes that it'll be a good sale.
How many of them bulls and cows are your guys's? Because I know you have some affiliate ranches that bring some too.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the bulls that we sell would be cooperator cattle.
Okay.
They do have to meet strenuous goals, or they have to match those goals that we set, physical standards. They have to meet genetic standard, really high genetic standards. But of the over 120 would be ours that sell in a year, 150 that sell in a year would be ours.
Okay.
Those that aren't ours, we hope that nobody can pick them out.
Yeah. And do they all have the R.A. Brown brand on them?
They do.
Okay. Yeah, because today, like when they was running bulls through and stuff and like seeing them out in the pens and stuff, mm-hmm. I noticed every bull had it. So I knew when you had some cooperators that, you know, had bulls in there too, I didn't know if they all had the R.A. Brown brand on them or how that went.
Yeah, our goal was to not make it a consignment sale, mm-hmm. to where there's different brands, different accuracies and EPDs. So these bulls make it to us 45 days post-weaned.
Okay.
Most of the time they're about 9 months old, and then we develop them here for 9 months. So they're 18 to 24 months old,
mm-hmm.
and that is our hope is that you cannot tell whose is whose, which cooperate, what, like, where did this bull come from? Mm-hmm. Our hope is that they are peas in a pod, look the same, they've got the same brand,
mm-hmm.
and that all of them pass and match R.A. Brown Ranch standards.
What is your favorite bull in the sale this year?
Man, I'm normally a red Angus guy,
mm-hmm.
but there are some black red bulls. So we cross black Angus and red Angus together. And there are some black red bulls that are just super sharp. I mean, just super attractive. And like when you drive by the pens, you go, who was that? Like there's a couple of those black reds that are towards the front of the sale. I can't remember which one. I'll have to look at which where my dad placed him in the catalog. Mm-hmm. But he's the first black red, and man, he is just a good looking stud. Like just the one you want to put in the front pasture, and that's him.
What's the advantages of crossing the blacks and the reds?
Our hope is that you get a little, I mean, hybrid vigor is what we're going for, but because they're so close genetically related, because they're both Angus,
yeah,
that you don't necessarily get hybrid vigor, but maybe we get some genetic recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do, there's a boost in fertility, a boost in growth.
Yeah.
And then Angus has done a phenomenal job at calving ease and carcass mm-hmm. quality. I mean, just really good. And then sometimes I worry that the Angus cow maybe got a little too big.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's there are some massive Angus cows out
there. Yeah, they are.
And part of that's because they've done such a good job at big carcasses that just marble out the wazoo, right?
Yeah.
And then Red Angus has just done a really good job of making a really good cow.
Mm-hmm.
And each breed, there are various, you know, there are some great Angus cows. But in general, the Red Angus cow just tends to do really well.
Yeah.
And so our hope is that we can cross those two, get those characteristics to match each other and to make a better cow. We're not married to any.
Best of both worlds out of each one. And
exactly.
Make it work.
And we're not married to any one breed. If there's another breed that comes up that's better, that does more of what our customers want, then we're going to go get it.
Yeah.
My dad's worked with 17 different breeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know there was 17 different breeds before hearing him say that as I was growing up. So, but Angus, Red Angus, and Sim Angus bulls, black and red of both of those, three of those breeds, are the ones that we work with. Those are the ones that our customers want, and we would rather sell what our customer wants than what we want to sell.
Say somebody's getting into the cow industry, and they're looking for a bull, and they want to come to the sale. What's some of the things that you would, some advice you would give to some of them people?
Hey, first advice I'd give is to call us. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows these cattle more than we do. And if there's something that you're looking for and you don't want to look through 580 of them, some people want to look through 580. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't if I was going to a sale.
Yeah.
It can be overwhelming. And so if they call us and say, hey, Tuck, I've got some heifers that I need to breed. I need three Cavanese bulls, black or red Angus. And I'm like, all right, buddy, let me get you a list. Here's 40 of them. You want shorter than that? All right. Here's 20 of them mm-hmm. that are in your price, that should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an auction. I don't know if it's in their price range or not, but should be in your price range. And then match your specs. Mm-hmm. So then there's only 20 that they've got to go out there and look at. I think that helps. Helps people be more comfortable at a sale.
Yeah.
And just asking a lot of questions, I think, really helps too. That's what we're here for. That's our job. Some people think it bothers us, but like I said, if there's a place where I can talk about cattle,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty happy.
Don't matter if it's on the phone with somebody in Maine or
no doubt,
you know, Canada or anywhere. You know,
exactly.
If you can help them out, it's a good day for you.
And for me, you'll have to speak English.
Yep.
So I'm not talented at being bilingual. So you'll have to speak English, and then we can talk.
Difference between ranching and farming, obviously you're not growing crops or anything out here. So how do you source and figure how much feed and that type of stuff needs to come to fill these bulls out for the sale?
Yeah, that's a tough question. We do have some wheat that we make some wheat silage out of, and we're just always trying to grow as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
But we use Livestock Nutrition Center. They are the ones, they're studs. They're talented, they've got the degrees, and they know how to use it. Most of them are in the ranching industry anyway,
yeah.
And that we like that. That helps us. They know what our problems are and what we're thinking, and so we use their nutritionist a lot. That's not our expertise, and we've tried to do it before, and not that we weren't doing a good job, but we would rather spend our time in creating better cattle than learning how to feed these.
Right, yeah, for sure.
We just want to kind of like a bull customer calling us. Like, we know the cattle better than anybody,
mm-hmm.
our cattle. And so let's call somebody who knows feed better than anybody. And we'll let them handle that. Then we can make better cattle.
Yeah, for sure.
We can get them fed. We can get them tested. And that just really freed up a lot of our time to do what we like. Mm-hmm. And I think it made us better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about the ranch and the history, but you're kind of famous on TikTok and Instagram. Like, tell us about how that kind of started for you.
Man, during the pandemic, just like a lot of people, we were stuck out here. I mean, we were kind of we were kind of social distance anyway. Mm-hmm. But being a social butterfly, I was like, man, I need to do something. And I had been on social media just like everybody since junior high and high school. But when one of the interns showed me TikTok, I was like, what is this? Like, nobody's gonna do that. I swiped a couple times and I laughed and dang it, I like funny videos and it had them. And so I started watching. And I mean, I had been doing, in 2020, I had been doing sports broadcasting for, 7 years by then. And so I really like media. I love communicating with people. And so there weren't any football games. I wasn't talking to any people. So that was kind of my way to communicate. And I liked video already, like watching any of the hype football videos. Mm-hmm. Like, I love those. Yeah. I was like, man, if I can give somebody chills like that gives me, like, that is so cool. And Yellowstone had been going on, and I was like, I started seeing some of the Western influencers, and kind of the same thing happened where it was like, if that's the face of our industry, then I'm not doing my job.
Yeah, for sure.
So that really got me. I mean, it got me going. I was like, all right, I'll do it. But, making videos of horses, and I think it's, I want to show that I really want to be genuine. I want to show that I'm genuine, and I hope people like that. But just learning to communicate with people, I think people who are separated from ag, want to talk to the cowboy, to the rancher, to the vet. And this gives us that opportunity to talk to somebody in Chicago that I never would have talked to before. And so I started using it and having fun with the videos and then realizing I was like, oh, I kind of getting quite of that. Got a lot of likes. Kind of went viral. Is that viral? I don't even know what viral means. and then it went from there. And, I had a contest with an intern that got me started on it. And that's when I started looking up what it took to be consistent, what the algorithm looks like. And it was kind of in a honeymoon phase. And I learned a lot in that first year. Mm-hmm. Did one for the bull sale. Mm-hmm. Parents didn't necessarily like it. They were like, get back to work. But they understand the use of advertising. And so they, let it slide. And then we had a bull sale, and somebody at the bull sale was like, man, I like that video. Mm-hmm. Like, y'all keep doing that. And I think that's when they really started to respect what it was doing.
Yeah.
So I just I kept going, keep learning. And it takes a lot of it's been 3 years.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Right.
And it's so frustrating that it seems like some people just do one video and it happens.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it for this long and, still – I'm just starting, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and you also, earlier we were kind of talking about it with just like, with TikTok and Instagram, you almost have two different dynamic audiences, You get people that feel like they're like hardcore ranchers, and they look at you and they're like, this guy ain't a rancher, he's just an influencer, So how do you, I'm sure you've had some people in the comments, little keyboard warriors, as we call them, but how do you cope with some of those things? Does it get to you, like when people get in the comments and kind of get after you a little bit? Does it affect you at all?
Yeah, I like to love on people and be liked by people.
Yeah,
and so it did bother me for a while. Like, I had some comments talking about now I wasn't a real cowboy, and for a guy that was raised on the ranch, like that's like, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then I started asking people doing it for a living, like, what do you do with these? And one guy I was talking to, Gatlin Didier, he's in Oklahoma. He's another guy that does a lot of really cool stuff on ranching. And he said, do you remember the one you responded to 2 weeks ago? I was like, no, I don't. And he was like, no matter if you respond and get mad or don't do anything and don't get mad, you won't remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. Now there are some, now I have fun with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
like most of the time, I have to have a reason why I did the thing. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have a reason, then I need to not do the video.
Yeah.
Right? I have to have a reason of why I'm roping that calf to doctor it, to save its life. And when I can say something logically back to that person, I feel like I'm a logical person. Yeah. Like, tell me both sides.
Yeah.
And if I can have that logical answer, then I want to be able to respond with I like to put some sass in there sometimes. Mm-hmm. But
oh, yeah, you got to.
Yeah, just have some fun with it. But tell the truth in that little bit of sassy answer. And I'm never going to change the person's mind that's typing back to me. But the people who read it.
Yeah, you could change theirs.
I can affect their decision-making or mindset on whatever they're talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you ever had somebody come to you and say how your videos have been an inspiration to them?
There's been one that really stands out. It's funny, most of the hate, not most, I've gotten a lot of hate on my 15-second prayer videos of people saying I'm doing it for the likes or you're only doing it because you're on social media. And there's a verse in the Bible that talks about how you should pray in your indoors or in the closet and not in front of people. And so I stopped. I was like, am I doing it for the wrong reason? Like, I better make sure that I'm doing it for the right reason. Because if I'm just doing it for likes, I don't need to do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't for a little bit. But I went to College Station, and I was at a place called The Chicken that a lot of people know. And there was a guy that came up and talked, and we were having a good time. And he was like, hey, why haven't you posted that? I mean, we didn't say anything about social media. Mm-hmm. And then he said, dude, why haven't you posted a 15-second prayer break in a while? I was like, man, and I told him why, and he got quiet, and he pulled his arm up, and he had chills, and he was like, keep doing them. And then he shared his testimony about how it makes him think of his dad who had passed away and had told him some things in a prayer, and we just both started sharing our testimonies in the bar in College Station.
Yeah.
And since then, and he was like, dude, keep doing it. Like, I love those. I need those. Like, it makes me want to do it more. And I was like, all right. I'd been praying, like, hey, like, Lord, show me. If I'm supposed to be doing these, then show me.
He gave you your answer.
And he said, well, here you are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, do it.
there's for those stereotypical Christians that don't think that you can minister in a bar.
Right.
That's where the people that
need it the most are.
Yeah. Like, man, God showed you what you needed to do in a bar or in College Station.
Yeah.
You know, you'd been praying that he gave you the answer, and he gave it to you in a bar.
He did. And he hit me with it hard. Like, I was just there having a good time with some friends, and then I didn't talk to my friends about the rest of the night because we were both sharing that testimony about what the Lord means to us and the challenges that we'd been through and how he had lost his dad, and the Lord just really pulled him through that. So, yeah, that was the deepest I'd ever been with anybody that I had just met, and it was in the bar in College Station.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it seems like the last couple days, you know, we've done quite a bit of podcast, and it's all been this ripple effect we talk about, you know, like just you doing that on social media affecting one person. Imagine that guy goes and is like, hey, you need to go, whether he's like, hey, go check out Tucker Brown's 15-second prayer video or, you know, videos, or let me pray for you or whatever it might be. It's like, just you help that one guy, and there's no telling how many other people other than him that you've affected with those videos. So,
yeah.
And it's hard. I mean, there's so much. It's like, for instance, this new, the Duck Dynasty video coming out on the 28th with Phil Robertson. They're only airing it for a week because Hollywood's like, wow. Oh, it's about religion and prayer. So we can't
take a guy that's been a drunk and, you know, become a Christian and have
changed his life.
A multi-million-dollar company. You know, Hollywood wants to cancel him.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a lot like the what was the other movie?
Sound of Freedom.
Yeah, like The Sound of Freedom. Have you watched The Sound of Freedom?
I haven't watched it, but that's all I've been told, is that I need to watch it.
It started out that way. It was only supposed to be in box offices for like a week or a weekend.
Wow.
And now it's been in there for like three months.
Yeah, it's been one of the top watched movies.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Hollywood thinks that they have a lot of influence on the world, and they do, but you know, in the end, God's always going to win.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we know the end of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, why? Somebody told me that the other day of like, why do we get nervous about spiritual warfare or spiritual? Like, we know what the end of the book says.
Yeah.
We know what's like, we know we win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was a really good point that I'd never thought of it that way.
And I think a lot of it's doubt from the adversary. I mean, it's like you think about anything, like you think of a company that is now on board with the gay pride stuff, which whatever, however you want to believe, I just think, you know, you're either going to lose those customers or you're going to gain those customers, whatever it is, minority, however you want to do it. But I think as a person, as an individual, like sticking to your morals and – because, I mean, I get nervous sometimes if I'm like – if I have an impression to say something that might be a little edgy and I don't know somebody, I'm like, is that the spirit that's telling me I need to do that, or is that – and then am I scared because the adversary's – trying to take this moment away that God's allowing me to put in my mind to do, you know? So it's like, it could be the same thing, especially on social media. Imagine the pressure that might come from you from the beginning, feeling as if you needed to do those 15 second prayers. It might've just been for that one guy you met at the bar.
Right.
But then, you know, like then you questioning yourself like, man, am I doing this for myself or am I doing this for God? Or, you know, because people in the comments are saying I'm doing it for the fame or whatever it might be. It's like, dude,
in reality, is how many followers does that get you? Probably not very many, you know.
I don't know.
And it's like, why are we letting what people say in the comments control our lives? You know, we was listening to "Like a River" by Granger Smith. We started listening to that on the way here, and you know, in the first chapter, he like tells a story about how he loses his son and everything, and then he goes to a griefing camp or a counselor. But it's like a bunch of people that are going through different things. And his counselor told him, he's like, hey, you need to go out to the forest and pick a tree and talk to the tree and write what the tree is telling to you down in a journal. And he's like, you know, hey, tree, you know, how are you and all this? And one of the things he said was like, you know, tree, I've seen in my travels trees that are bigger than you. And that are prettier than you and taller than you. And the tree said back to him, what he wrote down that the tree was saying to him was, you know, well, I'm the biggest and the prettiest in this forest, and that's all that I have to worry about. So, like, you know, that spoke to me in saying, you know, don't worry about what all them other people are doing on social media or in the ranching industry or in rodeo or whatever. Just worry about, like, what you're doing. And what, like, your camp is going to do for yourself. Yeah. You know, it's not being, like, egotistical. Is that that the word I'm looking for?
Yep.
Egotistical. Yeah, not being egotistical. Man, I used a big word. lifting yourself up. But, you know, it is, because if you're not going to, like, be able to lift your own self up, you can't lift somebody else up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe one of these interns, they might have been thinking they was coming out here to, you know, like learn how to manage a ranch or do whatever, and it might just be something you said or the way that you made them feel that they would have the same impact. You might have that same impact as that jogging coach did on you,
right?
Where you love that class. I mean, this job could be hell, you know, but they got to work with Tucker Brown, which made each day worth waking up and coming and ranching, you know. So, yeah, I think life is really, I believe that mindset is the biggest thing. And if you can control your mindset and you can understand the things that come to your mind and acting on good intentions and the things that come that are good, like all good things come from God, obviously. But just putting those, once you start doing that, the more he can trust you with bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, at that point, with us, you know, being these social media whatever. I mean,
Influencers,
whatever you want to call it. I just think there's a lot of pressure. I mean, the comment section is like this scroll of like haters, and there's also people that will defend you, and it's like there's like a little miniature war going on in the comments, whether it be all good or bad or whatever it might be. But the second that you do something that might make somebody uncomfortable or whatever it might be, it's like.
Well, I mean, it's like Granger talked about in the book. It's like, you know, he had people like blaming him for his son's death. Like it, he said that was like one of the hardest things during that time was like there was so many good things in the comments that was lifting him up, but he couldn't go and read them because all he could see was the what people was like saying that he was the reason that his son was dead. You know, that's like, if people would understand like what their words mean,
yeah,
like everything that comes out of your mouth, like has so much power attached to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of breaks my heart hearing that, like hearing those words, mm-hmm. And you talk about the good things that are on there, and I think there's a lot of people in the Western industry, or just in the beef industry, Western industry. It's like, well, it's just too toxic. It's just a bunch of bad stuff, and I'm like, you make your own news feed.
That's right.
Yeah. You follow the you pick mm-hmm. who you follow.
Yeah.
And so if you fill it with trash, yeah, you're going to be – like if you fill the bathtub up with trash, you're going to take a bath in trash.
That's right.
And if you do it with clean water and you're following things that will lift you up, or things like Everything Rodeo that's going to bring good people on and talk about cattle and rodeo and Jesus, like you're not going to be complaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one thing that, like, man, everybody says, like we had L4 Rope and Dummies on and this today, and he started a rope and dummy company because – like people wasn't welcoming him into the industry.
Mm.
And, you know, the more that the people that we interview and stuff, and like cowboys are one of the hardest people to get into the click, like to get into that algorithm. If we're going to be social media influencers, talking about the algorithm of cowboys, like getting into that click of, you know, you can't wear a t-shirt and a ball cap and be a cowboy. You gotta wear a button down and a cowboy hat everywhere you go, or you ain't no cowboy, right. You know. And it's in everything, and in rodeo, like if you don't have this saddle, then you don't rope good, or if you don't have this bit, then you know you're not right. And the more that we've been around, and you know, this is our 27th episode, you know, I'm seeing more and more people that are welcoming, and we need to be bigger and better at being the right influence in our industry.
Yeah, as an industry, we've been quiet. We've been wanting to social distance before that was a thing, and we've wanted to protect our way of life. And so you know, we've seen the generations before us have had trouble, whether it's with the death tax or the, you know, the government taking some land, whatever that looks like. And so I can see why they have those thoughts of like, heck no, I ain't letting anybody else in. But I mean, y'all see it, I see it, that there's a lot, we have an uphill battle that we have to talk for ourselves. And if it weren't for social media, I don't know if we could right now with the way that the world is. And so let's use it.
It's a great platform to allow us to spread what it is that we have, each of us tell our own story. And luckily, I mean, with this podcast, it's something that's been really cool, which we had no idea that it'd even be a thing. We just, you know, just ran with it. So
what do we got left to do before the sale?
We just fertility tested all the bulls, trick tested all of them. Y'all got to see a little bit of that going on today. Now is I wouldn't say the fun stuff, but get to do some mowing, some cleaning, getting these chairs in here all right, making sure all of our lights are in, and then calling customers. That's one of our best ways to communicate with them, is to call and say, hey, Cody, just want to make sure you knew you had an invite to come to the sale October 10th and 11th. Be great food. We'll have the Happy Toy Maker here. We'll have a place you can buy a hat, buy boots, some ranch merch. And we want to make it an event. And that's what, you know, we want to make it to where more than just whoever has the checkbook comes. Because it is a family event. That's what a lot of ranching and rodeos is having a family that, or a community of people that you like to go see. And we like to do that. We like to be the host, want to be the host of that. And it's been successful the past couple of years of adding more of that to it. Yeah. And we don't want to make it your county fair, but just a place to have fun, see some good cattle, see some of the best people in the world that get to come over here and, you know, that have a passion for the industry. So that's what's next. And hopefully getting our feed truck fixed since all three of them are down.
Yeah, so we pulled in today, and Tucker's in the feed truck, and it's not
the third, the backup.
It is the fourth.
Yeah, it's fourth. The fourth, and it's not even theirs, it's your cousin's.
It's the backup to the backup to the backup to the backup.
And right? His backup, probably.
And it is his backup.
Yeah. So it's like seventh string.
He's been
sitting in the bench for a long time.
Yes, he has. And the Cats left some stuff in there for us.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty not good.
Yeah, as soon as we were done, you pulled up and just got the garden hose out and just wheeled it over there.
Yeah.
Cooler down.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. Yeah. If everything went right, it wouldn't be a cool story.
That's right.
Yeah. Definitely wouldn't be a ranching story.
Yeah.
You know, what's some of the biggest struggles you've had, like, as growing up on the ranch? Like, was it a feed truck breaking down, or like what was some of the stuff that you remember as like the struggles?
Yeah. I mean, the number one thing that sticks out was that I call it the snowvid apocalypse. What was it? February of 2021, yeah. Whenever we Texas lost electricity, the state of Texas, and then it was -6 degrees. And that may not sound like much, but when you're built for like 32 degrees,
yeah,
that -6 is a long ways away.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, our pipes are just 2 feet deep, so every water, we had no water, we had no electricity. I had a 2-month-old little girl, mm-hmm. And we were like, what do we do? Our cattle don't have water. We can't start our feed truck because it's frozen. We don't have, you know, our gas and diesel isn't built for -6. Yeah. So we all kind of moved in together, mm-hmm. the whole crew did, and my family, and we slept in hoodies. And I mean, it's kind of fun to look back on and be like, remember when we slept in hoodies and 12 blankets? Like, mm-hmm. It was like the old days, and we all ate together. It was a really cool family growing experience because never had I, since I've been married, stayed with all of my family for like 3 nights.
Yeah.
But it was tough.
So how did you water cattle and everything?
That was the hard part. Is we thought it would be good to turn them out and get a tractor and like break the ice for them to go drink. Mm-hmm. But it ended up we almost lost cattle because of it, because they would go out onto the ice and fall through. Thankfully, we were able to get them out. But there are quite a few ranchers that I know that weren't able to get them out. Right. So we spent a lot of time breaking ice for cows out in the mm-hmm. pasture, and then we would make sure that we would either bring water to cattle, like we would break it, scoop it up and take it to them, mm-hmm. or we would break it all the way around whatever tank or pond that we were taking them to.
Take more time, but at least they wasn't
drowning,
finding a place to walk out.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And we tried a lot of things to try to get the water going, but that just ended up being what was best. And we had to take, we have probably 30 pens here of full of bulls, mm-hmm. and there was just long days. And I am thankful for good horses and warm jackets, because it was pretty rough.
And I can't imagine that. I'd in a situation like that, what do you do?
Yeah,
the no electricity deal was just really what blew my mind, because then our phones died.
Yeah,
and we're like,
wasn't able to call.
Isn't it crazy what we take for granted?
Yes.
Just these lights on in here. I mean, the second the power goes out or something, everything's an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Can't charge your phone. Can't run the microwave if you're hungry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just crazy. And we actually went to Breckenridge two months ago.
Yeah.
And we did they gave us a tour of this old gold shaft, this gold mine company, and how they all work together. Well, they took us on this tour, was part of this little deal. There's this tiny little cabin, probably as wide as this table, probably 3 tables long. And they said that 15 guys would stay in there in like 30 below with one little wood stove. And that's what they'd cook their meals.
They would all sleep up top on a ledge.
Yeah.
And,
but they would rotate.
And every couple hours, one guy would get down and keep stoking the stove, and they would just roll over. And
and they each had a shift. And the craziest thing about that was that they would all have dynamite, but the dynamite wouldn't work unless it was warm. So they'd have to keep it. Either guys would sleep with it in their jackets up next to their bodies, or they would have to keep it next to the fire, which you can only imagine.
And but dynamite was not very stable back in that day.
But I mean, just imagine, and back then those guys were probably making like just hardly any money, and their life expectancy was 30 years or something like that.
Yeah.
But you think about that today, and you think about just the way that it's evolved, talking, I mean, we just had a long conversation about social media.
Yep.
And I mean, right now we're talking into a microphone that goes through a cable. Like, how does sound travel into this, into that? It's just crazy. It blows my
Wi-Fi?
Mind. Yeah. Yeah. What Wi-Fi.
What is Wi-Fi?
How do you get internet service like through the air? Like,
yeah.
Where is it? You know,
exactly.
But I just think, you know, it's just, we don't have that. We really don't have full grasp on all the, like, what a blessing it is to live in this time. I mean,
Amen.
Because all these things, it's all great tools to like grow the kingdom, grow the ranches, grow individually as people, but also the negativity that people utilize some of this stuff to do is insane.
It really is. So, yeah, dangerous.
How much respect did that give you for your ancestors that grew up?
They are way
that?
Tougher than I'd ever be. They are tough.
Like, how long was you out with without that? Power?
It was about 3 days. My parents' house ended up getting electricity before, I don't know why, before other places did. And so my house was out for 3 days, and theirs was out for, I don't remember, two days,
mm-hmm.
Day and a half, something like that. But we, our heater went out too, where it's natural gas, and the natural gas pumps froze. Like, I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't either.
That's crazy.
They were tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you brought up a question, what you were saying earlier, just with how many people were in the industry to have to do the jobs then,
mm-hmm.
of whether it was stoking the fire or feeding the bulls. You know, I mean, it just took more than,
mm-hmm.
I did all of that today.
Yeah.
And
back then, you didn't even have a feed truck.
Yeah, truck or nothing.
You could. And it's like, you know, it's like the cell phones going out. Like, when you're, nowadays, when you're going on a jig line and you're like, hey, I see some over there, you just call somebody and be like, hey, over to your right, there's like 3 head. Go pick them up. Back in the day, you didn't have that. You just had to literally start at one end of the pasture and make sure you sweeped every inch of it.
Yep.
And it's, you know, I think we take for granted now of, like, how much technology has helped our industry.
So much. And not very long. Like, 40 years ago was way – 30 years ago, way different.
Well, and even, like, today, the lady looked like she had the TSA wands. That, like, you check the metal detectors, but she's just, like, scanning ear tags. And, like, I'm like, it's – man, it just blew my mind. And you, not even like the beef cattle industry, you got the dairy side of it. And I've got friends that have dairy cows, and they've got ankle monitors, and they just walk right on through. It tells you what cow it is, their tag number, last time they was milked. It's incredible.
It's wild. You know, we have a feed efficiency testing system, so we can feed these cattle that electronic ID scans through when they stick their head in the bunk,
mm-hmm.
and it can detect how much they eat. Up to like a difference of 3 grams. Mm-hmm. And so we can tell what bloodline of cattle is more efficient at turning feed into beef.
Mm-hmm.
And
pound for pound. How many pounds of feed to make how many pounds of gain.
And it's not necessarily helpful on like one animal, mm-hmm. but it is on, I mean, there's are some huge differences. Like when we first started, we had huge differences. I mean, it was something we had never measured before. And so the two bulls that grew the most in 60 days, you know, one would eat twice as much as the other. And if we can make them grow the same on half the amount of feed, talk about sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I have a friend that works for Fever Tags. I don't know if you've heard of them.
But yeah, doesn't it like light up?
Yeah, it lights up when they have a fever, and now their new model, like it'll send it to your phone. So you got
that
one that's you know, running a fever for so many hours, it'll send it to your phone, and it even like categorizes of like tells you what pasture or what pen it's in.
Handy.
So like, you know, your cowboys or whatever know exactly what pen to go in and get it out. Like, you know how much time that's going to save us?
Yeah,
it's amazing. Like, you know, he's like, man, it's hard to get people to understand the investment, but when. And he's like, a lot of them, it's the feedlots that can't get good cowboys.
Mm.
But what I see is it, like, even the good cowboys, how much time it saves them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you have 10,000 head out there and one pen has 500 head in it, and you know that two of them out of the 500 need to be pulled, and it's got a light in it. They run in there in 5 minutes, get them picked out, and
fast
back out, flash.
And wow. And you know, doctored and back in the pen and putting weight back on.
Yeah, yeah, the weight back on's huge too. Yeah. That's, I mean, early detection. The another thing we have is it's called VINTS, virtual fence, mm-hmm. and it's like a. It's like a shock. You put a collar on them, and it's like a dog shock collar. Mm-hmm. And you can use satellites to build your own fences. And then if they get close to the fence, it beeps at them. And if they touch your virtual fence, then it gives them a shock. And you can train them to follow that. So we can make our own pastures now within our pastures, yeah, and just get better, you know, better grazing.
Do rotational grazing with that.
Yes.
And not without fencing or... Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. That I've never even heard of that.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah,
man. It's frustrating because it takes some time. You got to change the batteries. You got to hook it on. They come off sometimes.
That's right.
And so it has its bugs that we're working through. But just the opportunity that we don't have to. We can save our fences. We can keep the neighbor's bull. Like if we know there's a neighbor's bull over there, we can make sure our cows don't get close to that
right.
fence.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's just a lot of opportunity that we saw in that, and we're going to try it out. I mean, we've always, you know, we brought the first cattle to Throckmorton, and if we can, there's a lot of people that do what their granddad did, mm-hmm. but I don't think they are. If you're doing exactly what granddad did, like that's a long time ago. But if you're doing what granddad did and you're using the best technology, you're using the best breed.
That's where I think people like get it twisted. Is like you're doing exactly the same thing that your great 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 grandpa did. You're just using the resources that you have.
Yeah,
you know, he used the resources he had to do the best thing he can. Like you're using the resources you have to get the best product that you can have for your generation.
Yeah,
you know, and it's going to evolve and change, and your daughters are going to ranch way different than what you do.
Yeah,
you know, and it's crazy to think about that. And so many people are stuck in like, well, it's history and we can't change it, but it's already changed, so why don't we use the resources that we have?
My dad, he growing up, he's a very wise man, a guy I look up to, and he said, and I find truth in I find truth in this statement in a lot of industries, of that the reality is that we don't have to change. Mm-hmm. Like ranchers don't have to change. Football players, you know, football teams don't have to change, or social media teams don't have to change, whatever. But the reality is that we have to compete with those who do. That doesn't change. We still have to compete, whether they're using a better technology, being more efficient, and making more money. When a hard time comes, the guy who's going to be there is the guy who's been the more efficient.
Yeah,
who's doing everything to make a buck, because it is a cool lifestyle. But in the end, if you don't make it a business, it's kind of hard to hang on to.
Yeah, it is. It's honestly the hardest business in the world to make money at.
It's tough. And when times are good, it is good.
Mm-hmm.
But we know there's another bad time coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know that. And so, and I know that next July it's going to be hot. Mm-hmm. So why don't we prepare for that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But you got all these fans out here, these big old fans. Yeah. You think it'd be kind of cool down out here.
I wish that worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I've seen some comments on your stuff that when they're talking about the fans in the background,
mm-hmm.
cooling the bulls down.
Yeah. Big old windmills generating
uh-huh.
energy.
Yeah,
I think, too, just kind of going back to touching on that ranch we talked about, sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it was tough for them back in the day when they would face those challenges, they found alternative routes to sustain the ranch, mm-hmm. like harvesting the mesquite, selling firewood, or those type of things. Have you seen any of that here where you guys have had to alter some of the things that you do around the ranch in order to sustain the lifestyle and just the livelihood of the ranch itself?
Yeah, that's been a big part of the history of the ranch, too. I mean, my granddad started a mesquite wood chipping company well before its time. Like, if we did it now, I'm sure there would be some more success. But he did it kind of before it was a thing. And the cool part is that it seems like everybody that does has a cool success story, had a failure that really got them there.
Yeah.
But using all not using, but you know, respectfully using all of our resources as a part of making. We are land managers that use cows as a part of it. Mm-hmm. It's the part we like the most. But you know, we will sell some water. We'll sell some caliche dirt. We sell some semen on our bulls, and we try to find different routes to do that. And you know, social media is part of mine.
Yeah.
And being able to, like, I love to communicate with people and give those hopefully give those chills to people. And if I can monetize that to, you know, to help feed my daughter when it doesn't rain and we got to get rid of the cows one year,
mm-hmm. take advantage of it.
I would be dumb not to.
Yeah.
Like that. I remember somebody said, you know, if you can, it's a really cliche saying, but I kind of like took it to heart. It was like, what do you like to do? What would you do if you didn't get paid? I was like,
cowboy.
I don't know. I'd part cowboy and be part of it.
Yeah.
And then making content. I don't like that word, but making relatable videos that are kind of funny too. Like I did that for a long time without getting paid at it. But then they said, well, go find how to get paid for it.
Yeah, that's like me and Ace, like we sing and like dance and act stupid going down the road way before like we put a camera in front of us.
Yeah.
Like, so why not be ourselves in front of a camera and try to make a little money at it?
No doubt. And so we talk about these new opportunities. Question for y'all. There's always this big topic at every convention that I go to of finding labor to bring back to agriculture. Mm-hmm. And so I have a different opinion than probably most people, but what, generally speaking, you know, what does agriculture do to bring people back into the industry?
Man, I think, you know, myself, we got to make it more inviting, because like we said earlier, it's like, you know, rodeo cowboys and cowboys, ranching cowboys, and, you know, people in this industry are very shut-doored. And, you know, we might, like, you're bringing in interns, and a lot of places won't do that. Because they're like, hey, them people ain't going to know nothing, and I'm going to have to babysit them. But if we only look for the people that can go do every job without us holding their hand, how are we going to have more to sustain the industry?
I think just being relatable, too. Like, you know, like, there was a video of you at a Cowboys game, and no one at that game knew that you were a rancher, probably, because you're wearing a Cowboys hat. And,
probably not.
You know, but this is something that's crazy to me, is that there's certain people out there that, you know, someone wears a Jason Aldean hat, and they're like, oh, he's just trying to be a cowboy or whatever. Well, it's like, if you are a baseball fan and you wear a baseball jersey to a baseball game, are you some kind of baseball poser?
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's like,
good point.
There's so many opportunities within our, I would say, lifestyle over industry.
Sure.
That, you know, for me, it's like just having conversations with people that are more relatable to me, because you can find something within somebody, whether it be a burly biker guy or a more feminine guy or something like that you can relate to them, and they'll be like, man, that guy, you know. And what is the definition of a cowboy? You hear it in songs, or you hear it in poems, or you see it on TV. It's like, well, you have to be some on horseback all the time, or you know, it's like, what is the true definition of a cowboy? And I think it's just who God made you to be. And I think that if you're willing to work and you're willing to put those things in, and you're willing to, I mean, because Jesus, he was a shepherd, and in a sense he was a cowboy. I mean, he led us, you know. And I think being relatable and being able to, for people to understand that and feel that they can communicate and they can connect with you, that's really the only way that people can see. And then you create that lasting ripple effect that we just talked about, the last, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's probably 1,000 answers, but when it comes down to it, I think you have to turn around and look at yourself and ask the same question. What can I do to invite others to want to? And for me, it's like, you might not, if I ever was to come in contact with someone, something I've been big at is just, I would rather somebody recognize and remember the way I've made them feel over, and it might not be, they might not remember what I said, but the way that I made them feel, that'd be the biggest thing to me. Like, man, I met Nace one time, I don't know what he said to me, but he made me feel important, and he made me feel like he was listening, and those are the type of things I feel like, because I've, for me, I mean, I didn't grow up in the Western industry. I don't know a thing about ranching or farming or rodeoing. Or now, luckily, I'm grateful for this opportunity that this platform has given me to do that. But, I was nervous to be around cowboys because they're just like, you got to be all rough and around the edges. And, you know, to me, I just was never was that way. I was outgoing and I was fun, and I felt like I could be myself around those guys because I'd be like some little dweeb or what, you know. But now it's like, you know, this platform's allowed me to be myself and to just like, you know, just to like just be you, you know. Mm-hmm. I think so many people get wrapped up in trying to be someone they're not, and I think that's, I tried to do that for a long time and I was never happy, you know. And now that it's like, I mean, Cody, he's a true cowboy through and through, but you know, me and Cody have had conversations that have been very personal that we can relate on the same pages, and I didn't grow up cowboying, you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
I think if you can relate with somebody and you can show them that like you're willing to listen or talk or whatever it is, mm-hmm. I think that's it.
No doubt. I think too, I mean, I love that because we do have to be kind to people.
Yeah.
Like we're called to. Mm-hmm. Another part that it goes back to, we don't have to change, but we have to compete with those who do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be really hard for me to, as a college student, I'm like, okay, I have this in-town job where I have every holiday off. I have every weekend off. I get off at 5. I'm going to get paid more. And on all those other times, I can go to the rodeo. I can mm-hmm. rope on the weekends. I can, or do I go try to ranch and either try to buy one and spend millions trying to buy one, or where do I go learn? Like, there's not that answer. And the other side is so much more inviting because you go to you hear cowboys, well, we got to work 7 days a week and ain't no time for time off. You ain't going to a Cowboys game. And that's not inviting as an industry.
No,
and we haven't changed, and now we're competing with those companies that are giving them more opportunity.
Yeah,
and that's the thing, is like, we can change. We can be, ranching can be a 9-to-5. You just have to have a couple different shifts, you know?
Yeah.
You have to hire maybe one more person to cover that weekend shift to go feed, so your feed guy can go to his, you know, daughter's softball game or whatever, you know? And it's, I think that people have seen that, oh, you only can have to work 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 23 hours in a day. You know, you might get an hour off, and that's when you get to take a nap. And it's been that way for so long, and that's like,
yeah,
they don't want to get away from that because it makes them feel tough.
It does.
You know, it makes them feel like a man because they work 7 days a week.
It's like a pride thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's pushing people away from our industry.
And maybe that's stereotypical, but anyone from the outside looking in, even with Yellowstone, I mean, look at Rip, the character that he plays. Nobody's going to want to walk up and talk to Rip.
No.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, I'm sure there is guys like that, and I'm sure there's people that have bad experiences with guys that have had that kind of a mentality. But yep. At the end of the day, I think there's just so many experiences and situations that are endless. But I think the more that we are open to being more open and being like just willing, I think that's how it changes.
The thing I love about the ranching, one thing I love about the ranching industry is, and the Western industry, is that we do love tradition. Sometimes we love tradition so much that we let it suppress our success. Mm-hmm. And that frustrates me to no end, because like you can go to your son's football game. Mm-hmm. Because you can have that app that can text you mm-hmm. whether something's sick or not.
Yeah.
You can go.
Yeah.
We don't have to stay out here. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. I know that there are a lot of people who have been doing this for a long time that have been very successful at it, that have a different mindset. And that's the cool thing about ranching, is that there are many ways to be successful.
Yeah. You don't have to be like the R.A. Brown or
no.
the whatever. You know, you can do your own thing. But, you know, you know, we've talked a little bit, but just sitting down here, like, what I love about, like, what your guys' mindset is. Because just, you know, from what I've heard in this hour conversation that we had, is, like, you guys are looking outside to see what can help like your workers and your cowboys the most. Like, who else is going to go get a virtual fence for their cows? Yeah. Like, they're going to say, hey, no, you guys go out there for 2 weeks and build 10 miles of fence.
Mm-hmm.
And if that don't work, then we're going to have to tear it down and move it, yeah. You know? When, if you just invest a little bit of money, it saves your workers.
And you get to live life. That's the biggest thing. You got to live, man. I mean, you definitely do need to be dedicated. But I think that there's certain things, experiences that you can look back on and just, like, experiences outside of work that are obviously
valuable.
Yeah, man. Just with people, with...
And keep you married.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. That's a big thing. I mean, if you can't, you know, be home, if you're always on the road, whatever situation it might be. I mean, I have no words to really say because I'm not, but I can only imagine being in a relationship and making that a priority just like you would
right.
ranching. I mean, you would want to invest the same things you would into your relationship as you would a full-time job or a ranch or a career, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and that is the hard thing because there is always something we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And making that priority list is hard to keep straight sometimes, especially yeah. when the sale's 13 days away.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like today, they was working bulls through and stuff, and it was like almost 5 o'clock. And they're like, hey, let's run them other last set of 10 bulls through, the big bulls. And he tells like, man, it's hot. Let's wait till in the morning. You guys can run them through. We'll go gather cows, you know. And it's the little things like that. Like, it's okay to wait till tomorrow
yeah.
to get some stuff done. Like, and it was because it's hot. Like, you don't want them bulls to
get
hot and stressed out when you're trying to work them. But,
right.
like, it's all right to wait till tomorrow sometimes.
Yep. Yep.
It's not... There's 24 hours in a day, but there's always tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt. That's mindset of the, you know, our generation not wanting to work as much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have this technology that we can use to get the same amount of work done in less time.
Mm-hmm.
And can we use that? Yeah. And can we abuse it and be on our phones too much? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do really believe we have a little bit of cowboy in us all. And people want to vicariously live through their phone and live that cowboy lifestyle. And I think that's a part of my success is that I can ride a really good horse out here in God's country and share that. And people like it.
Somehow someone can connect to that just looking through the screen.
Whether it was a memory of being with their grandparents
yeah.
or whether it's something that they want to do in the future, that it's there. And I do treat my social media as a business, so I'm thinking ahead and trying to follow the trends and walk that line of being a TikTok cowboy and a sixth generation rancher with a history of my family that I'm super proud of.
Yeah.
So, but as long as I can still, I think that's my key. The thing I want to share is that I do, like, I ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I may not be the best hand. There's a lot of good cowboys out here in Texas that are way better roping than I am, that can train a horse. I will never be able to train a good horse, but I won't ruin one. Thankfully, my brother's a heck of a trainer. And so I'm just trying to show that, look, I do care for the cattle. I'm trying to make the best ones there are.
Mm.
And I'm trying to make these horses, you know, bond with these horses and really enjoy them and ride them and, because I do like it, and they like it too.
Yeah.
Man, you get a horse that likes being in front of a cow, you can feel that.
Oh, yeah.
You can feel that. And then that tradition that we love is being cowboys and mm-hmm. trailing behind a set of cows. Like, if I could set behind a trail of black and red cows on a gray horse, like, man, living the dream right there.
Yeah, for sure.
With some Snoop Dogg playing on my phone, probably.
Yeah, that's probably what's going on in this picture right here.
Yeah.
Well, it's...
I'm wearing the same shirt.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, is that the same shirt?
Same shirt.
Holy smokes. Same hat or no?
I'll sign it for you. Yep, same hat. Yep, same hat.
Dang. I would like a signed catalog, please.
I won't charge you this time.
Yeah. Well, Tucker, you're... ever since I met you, you know, you're full of life. You have just such an awesome vision, and you can tell you're dedicated to your craft, whether it be, I'm not going to call you an influencer, What's a good word for him, Cody?
A cowboy.
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 Call him a media cowboy.
Media cowboy.
There you go.
That's pretty good.
MC.
But just also, you know, just you as a person, just allowing us to come into your house, and you made a nice dinner, and just, you know, just
some good R.A. Brown beef.
Yes.
Yeah, baby. Some New York strips and T-bones.
Yeah.
Man, seasoned up with hardcore carnivore.
Absolutely.
That's some good stuff.
I love it. Stuff. Only the best for y'all.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the kind words. Like, I, you know, I hope I can do that. Lord tells us to show the light, and people like to be around happy people to make them better. And if I can be like my grandman, Peggy Brown, like if I can love like she did half as much as she did, I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
Because if I could be like her and share that light and be kind, like that's the goal.
Yeah, I'm gonna call you
to meet her.
Yeah, I'm gonna call you an influencer too, real quick, because you taught me some, you influenced me to like work on some dance moves as well at the wedding.
Come on,
yeah,
come
that
on.
Little in and out with the leg.
Yeah,
man, I'll have to throw the video in there. But man, me and Tucker were getting it at the wedding.
So. There wasn't a rug that wasn't cut when
I'm
we.
I'm telling
left.
You what, man,
cut them all.
That's right.
We did way too much fun.
Yes, sir. Well, the way that we end our podcast is we usually have our guest tell us what the first song is that comes to their mind, and we like to sing it together. So,
I have two that have been stuck in my head all day. Now, we can go like a Texas country way, or we can go a not a Texas country way.
Or does the not in Texas way involve some dance moves?
Oh, no, probably not. Like, okay. It's not one that I'd probably dance to, but
okay.
Either some Texas country or some Nickelback.
Oh, what Nickelback you got? What song you got in your head?
The one that is, what's the name of it?
How's it go?
Is it Rockstar? Is that one?
Oh, yeah.
What was I listening to today? It was Rockstar.
Rockstar? Do you know that word, or that song?
Or Adios Amigo. Not that one.
Or Adios Amigo is the other one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I know that one.
Adios Amigo, you just crossed over the line.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I don't think
I'll show it to you after.
Okay.
You need to start listening to some Texas country.
Some Red Dirt.
Yeah.
No, I need to hop on the Red Dirt train.
Come on.
Okay, here we go. Make sure you're singing loud and proud.
You don't got to worry about that.
Okay. Which is actually rare, come to find out, because nobody, every time we get to
this. Well, it's rare because he actually said he would sing. Most people are like, I ain't going to sing, and then they belt it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So this could be the opposite. Maybe like.
Shut him up.
Oh, what the heck?
Oh, no.
Connected.
Oh, no.
Still unconnected.
Tell me what you want.
I want a brand new house on an episode of Cribs and a bathroom I can play baseball in.
And a
king size tub big enough for 10 plus me.
Tell me what you need.
I need a credit card that's got no limit and a big black jet with a bedroom in it. Gonna join the Mile High Club at 30,000 feet. How you gonna do it? I'm gonna take this life of fortune and fame. Might even cut my hair and change my name. Y'all just wanna be big rock stars and living in South Dawson, driving 15 cars. The girls come in here in the blue gum Jeep. We'll all stay skinny cause we just won't eat. And we'll hang out at the coolest bars with the VIP and the movie stars. Hey, I want to be a rock star.
Well, since we couldn't get it connected, I think that might work pretty good.
Oh, you think?
We were jamming, I thought.
Oh, we were jamming.
Well, we appreciate y'all checking in, sticking around.
And listening to another episode of the Everything Rodeo Podcast. We want to thank Mr. Tucker Brown and R.A. Brown Ranch for letting us come in and invade their sale barn.
Hey, guys, this was more fun than I could have asked for it. So thanks for letting me be a part, and go Everything Rodeo.
So if somebody wants to come up to your cell or buy a bull from you, where can they get a hold of you?
RABrownRanch.com. It's got our contact information there, or you can follow me on the socials, Tucker Brown, R-A-B. Shoot me a message. I message almost all of everybody back.
Nice. You bet.
Peace up. A-Town down.
I don't know where to join in there.
When a girl come get me, but then I light her up and turn her blow. I said, baby, let's go. And I told her, I said,
yeah.
There's one more yeah.
And I come and help me.
Stop recording. For fortune and fame, I'd even cut my hair and change my name. Cause we all just wanna be big rock stars and live in hilltop bosses driving 15 cars.
Everything rodeo, everything cowboy, and everything in the Western industry, bringing to you right here at the table and behind the mic,
Mr. Nace Renfrey and...
Boys, if you would, raise your hats. Mr. Nace Renfrey down there in the black hat and the long hair. And as well as Cody Stanley. He can hear you now. Give him a hand.
That's a wrap, brethren.